A kingfisher. This is something that our listeners are in Kingston and Richmond really concerned about, because they've been under the impression that we are going to get a new swimming pool, a new leisure centre. And obviously last week the council said that was put on hold. So as something that you were supporting, now that this is halted, where does this leave the residents of Kingston and Richmond?
It's not halted so much as delayed, and the delay is very much around the cost. So when the decision was made, and I believe it was towards the end of 2019, well, the Kingfisher was closed towards the end of 2019, and I think the decision to pull it down and replace it was made in 2020, I think that's right. At the time, and I continue to be very supportive of that, because I wanted to see a new swimming pool. I've been taking my kids to the Kingfisher. They both learned to swim there. I spent many Saturday mornings sat on the side of the learner pool, and it just wasn't a pleasant place. And I was really, I really liked the idea. I wanted us to be bold and ambitious and have something much, much better for the people of Kingston. And I still want that. But obviously, at the time the decision was made, the price of concrete was something like 50p per unit, and now it's £5 per unit, and that's just the kind of inflation that's impacting the construction sector. The cost of materials, the cost of labour has gone up enormously compared to what we thought it would be when the decision was made in 2020. So that's really what's driving the delay. But I mean, the council remain very committed to building that new swimming pool. It will happen, but it would be silly to be striking deals with construction contractors at the very, very height of, while we're seeing inflation at its highest. I'm confident that the cost of materials, the cost of labour, the general cost of construction will start to come down as supply chains sort themselves out post-pandemic. We're already seeing dramatic fall in the cost of fuel. So I'm sure that I'm confident that that will filter through as the year, as time goes on. So I think it makes sense to wait until there's a better deal to be done. But certainly the kind of, my understanding is that the inflated costs, the extent to which costs have become inflated since the decision was made, meant that it wasn't, I think it's the right decision. But I know that the council remain very committed to opening a new swimming pool and will proceed with that as quickly as they possibly can.
Because there was another option, not to knock it down and to just redevelop it. So although it doesn't involve completely demolishing it and building from scratch, would it not have been better to have gone with that option? The cost of materials and the cost of living is going to continue for a while, especially as the war with Russia continues. Swim England, you know, have also voiced their concerns. It's not going to be a swimming pool, especially if the one in New Malden shuts down. Kingston's not going to have a swimming pool. And already we're speaking to listeners who are having to pay to take their children out of borough, which obviously isn't an ideal situation.
So I don't think there's any suggestion that the one in New Malden is going to close down. I've certainly not heard that. Absolutely recognise that it is more and more challenging to find places to swim in Kingston. I think all I would say is at the time the decision was made, obviously there wasn't, Russia hadn't invaded Ukraine, there hadn't been a pandemic. To predict how costs would spiral. So it's been on the basis of the information we had at the time, I think it was the right decision. You can look back and say, well, if we just repaired the roof instead, we'd still have a swimming pool now. And of course, that's true. But yeah, as I say, we couldn't have predicted at the time how things would turn out. And they're, you know, very much factors beyond the council's control, the pandemic and the invasion. So, and I'm still supportive now, but as I say, it's not as if that could have been predicted.
I mean, people were worried about costs going back to 2019, 2020, even though we hadn't had the cost of living crisis and we hadn't had the war. People were very concerned that something could cost as much as it was costing. I think that's more of the point, is that it would have been perhaps better in some people's eyes to have built something that maybe might have been up and running now.
My understanding is the decision was between fixing the roof on the old Kingfisher and demolishing it and building a new one. So it's not, so that those are the two decisions on the table. And I did think that in the end, just repairing the roof would have been a false economy, because eventually you would have needed to replace the building. It was an old-fashioned building. The energy efficiency was terrible. The the accessibility was terrible. So to me, it made sense to seize the moment and put a new building in there, which would last for many more decades, as opposed to just patching up the roof on something that may well reach the end of its useful life before too much longer anyway. So we could equally have been having now a conversation about how, you know, the costs of repairing the roof were a waste because now we needed to scrap the building anyway. So, you know, hindsight is a is a valuable thing, but it's not always possible to go back and evaluate decisions made previously on the basis of what you know now. I still think, I'm still confident that there will be a new swimming pool and that once it's built, people will love it and it will be a real asset to Kingston. It is unfortunate it's taking longer than people expected to build it, but I think the decision to kind of delay is the right one, because otherwise the cost of it would just be so hugely inflated, and I think waiting a few months, which I think is the plan to kind of renegotiate with contractors, is the right thing to do.
Moving on to the ULEZ and the buses, the ULEZ is probably the biggest thing we hear about, the biggest bone of contention with our listeners. We've already seen that with London buses, 12 million miles have been lost, which was something the Lib Dems uncovered. Can anyone get through to Sadiq Khan?
No, is the quick answer. I have a lot of conversations with Caroline Pidgeon and Hina Bakari, who are Liberal Democrat representatives on the Greater London Authority, the Greater London Assembly, sorry. And this is the thing. And I've made repeated representations as an MP, as have my colleagues Ed Davey and Manira Wilson. The ULEZ already comes into a section of my constituency. Barnes and East Sheen are already within the ULEZ. We had the extension about 18 months ago. And I made lots of representations to him at the time, and he barely responded to any of them. So it doesn't surprise me that lots of people now are trying to raise some of the issues that ULEZ is going to present for them, and that they're not getting a terribly constructive response. So that's absolutely in line with my own experience. I think one of the things that concerns me the most is, and you've pointed out about the buses, and the ones I'm particularly concerned about are the 213 and the 57, that and particularly because they serve so many secondary schools. Also, they're the major bus routes from Kingston Town Centre up to Kingston Hospital. They connect Kingston to Wimbledon, Kingston to Sutton. They're really, really major bus routes. And I mean, I use them both myself quite regularly, and I've really noticed now that we are getting far less regular services. And the ones that I was on one during school half term, I was waiting in Kingston Town Centre for the 213, and I had to wait about 20 minutes. And when it arrived, it immediately filled up in Kingston Town Centre. We couldn't let anybody else on until after we'd gone past the hospital. That's how crowded it was. And that's the impact of reduced services. So that's why I've been trying to lobby the mayor. And I've been saying to him, you know, these are bus services that that serve those parts of outer London that are going to be impacted by the ULEZ. The ULEZ can only be successful if we give people alternatives. And if we take away their alternatives, we can't persuade people to use the buses. If the buses aren't there, then, you know, it's going to fly in the face. So he's come back, he said, ooh, data, all this sort of thing. But I'm like, you know, it's kind of like, actually, you have to plan for a future of increased bus use if you want to restrict people using their cars. And, you know, so I'm continuing to lobby, but he's not been very responsive.
We've spoken quite a lot with Sutton Council because they're doing quite a novel thing in refusing to sign the Section 8 agreement. As I understand it, Richmond obviously has already signed because it's already in part of the borough. Kingston, I think, has already signed as well. Realistically, what can people do? Their MP can't get through to the Mayor of London. What option is there?
I don't know, is the quick answer. The Section 8 agreement is about erecting the cameras to catch people coming into the ULEZ. And I mean, you're quite right that Sutton have refused to sign it, but actually the mayor has the powers to overrule them. So it's, you know, while it's obviously up to Sutton what they do about that, it's not as if that's going to stop the ULEZ coming in. We had a debate in the House of Lords about it. Peers have got involved, MPs, local councillors, council leaders, so many people. And I mean, what the Liberal Democrats are suggesting, not that we stop the ULEZ or that we don't do the ULEZ, but we're just saying in order for the ULEZ to be effective at achieving the things that the mayor wants it to achieve, we need to put in place a more generous scrappage scheme to help people, you know, swap out their non-compliant cars for compliant cars. We need, as I said, more public transport to give people those options. What I think more than anything is people just need a bit more time. I think it was only last September that the mayor announced that suddenly the ULEZ was going to impact all of these other places from August this year. And it simply doesn't give people enough time to swap their cars or to rethink the way that they undertake their journeys. And with a bit more time, we would see more people swapping their cars anyway. They would have just planned to do that. And it would just give people more chance to think about how they travel around the city. So that's our big call. If we could just spend a little bit more time, because I know, as I say, I've already in my constituency already had the ULEZ expanded so that the last ULEZ expansion now brings in Barnes and East Sheen. And actually, because people did have plenty of notice and they did have time to plan, it went forward relatively smoothly. So it just seems a bit bizarre to me that you wouldn't give an equal amount of time when so many more people are going to be impacted in areas of London with much less public transport provision, in areas of London where people are not as wealthy as they are in Barnes and East Sheen, in areas of London where people are more dependent on the car. To do all of that in a year when, you know, the original ULEZ expansion worked so well because they had longer to plan, it doesn't make sense to me. But I will keep making the case to the mayor for a bit more time and a bit more support, and we'll just have to see.
If we had a Lib Dem mayor of London, what would the proposal be? Sticking with the ULEZ but rolling out at a slower rate?
Mayor is right, we need cleaner air. There are other things, though, that are contributing to poor air quality in South West London. And funnily enough, actually the biggest contributor of poor air quality in South West London is actually wood-burning stoves. And so many people are surprised when we say that, but it's the truth. If you look at the data. So I think if we had a Lib Dem mayor, that would be something I'd be really wanting to focus on, because that would be the quickest and easiest way to improve air quality in South West London. Just making sure that people were aware of the damage that that's doing to air quality, encourage them to use other ways of heating their homes. Those other alternatives are easily available and not expensive for people to implement. So that would be my first step, or the Liberal Democrats' first step. But also, yes, I think there's a lot to be said for cleaning up the air that's being, from emissions from vehicles. But it's just about supporting people, understanding that these are not cost-free choices for people and supporting them with those costs. As I said, there is a lot more you could do with a scrappage scheme. I think people would be much more supportive of the ULEZ if there were more options for them to be given financial support to help them swap out their vehicles, particularly for businesses who are going to be really badly hit, those people who are driving non-compliant vans, for example. I think we could do a lot more on that. And of course, then, as I say, over an extended period of time, it would make it easier to make those financial decisions both for people to make those financial decisions for themselves. They might routinely be changing their car in the next 3 years, and so they've got the choice then to select a compliant vehicle. But also you could spread out the costs of a scrappage scheme over that time as well and be able to support more people. So that's the sort of thing. But I mean, I just think generally, and everyone who lives in South West London knows it's not just about climate change or air quality. The amount of congestion, which is really snarling up all of our roads, there's such a great case to be made for more people to switch to walking and cycling and bus journeys and train journeys. And, you know, what do we need to do to support people to make those choices? And what I'd be really keen on is not imposing them on people, but supporting them to make a change that would benefit them as well as the wider community. But also, I mean, it is the problem of kind of almost retrofitting our, long established road network and trying to create space for cyclists. I mean, I think it's important to do that. I totally recognise the cyclists not using the provision. I mean,
I wouldn't want to use it. I wouldn't feel safe.
I drive up and down Kingston Hill quite a lot, which has got another cycle lane implemented by the mayor. I'll be honest, I think that's a perfectly good cycle lane. Most of it, bits of it, there are slightly problematic.
The bit past the Albert Pub is a bit hairy if you're joining it from outside the Albert Pub, because it just suddenly merges into the road and it's that's a bit that bit's a bit hairy.
It's not ideal, but as I say, it's trying to retrofit existing road networks with cycle lanes, and I think we should be doing that where we can. But of course, it's never going to be a perfect solution. It is really, really difficult to do. But, you know, I think it doesn't. But I tell you what, as I am, you know, cycling, walking and driving around North Kingston, I do find increasingly more and more people are cycling, yeah, and their children are cycling, and they're cycling and walking to school, which I think is really important. So people are choosing alternatives to getting in the car, and I think it's partly driving is stressful
for the Mayor of London, and we can't get him to speak to us, and I know other radio stations can't get him to speak to them either. So
he is very unresponsive. If it makes you feel any better, he won't speak to me either.